Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt His name together. It is Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. Thank you, God. Joining me in the studio is a special guest. She's going to be a part of our Prime Life Times in Review, which many a Wednesday we spend time reading stories. And this is only my second guest in 2 or 3 months now, but Dee Chesser is joining us. You've heard her read her stories on past occasions. She's the director of our Great News Radio Children's Choir, which hasn't met for 3+ months now, and we'll see how God will orchestrate that in the coming days. But Dee, thank you for being available, and we're practicing social distancing and all the right things. We've both been kind of quarantined away from people for a long time, but we're both healthy and doing all right, and thank you for joining us.
Well, it's wonderful to be here. This is actually my first outing.
Wow. I know I felt special when I texted you and said, might there be the possibility you could entertain the idea? And I will say, Dee and I just listened to a 6.5-minute accounting of Sam Elliott telling Sergeant Ray Lambert's story. And I wanted to share it with her so we'd be prepared, because it's pretty emotional. It's pretty powerful. But Dee, what was so special about it, once we prayed up this program, you mentioned as great as the sacrifice that this Sergeant Ray Lambert did on behalf of the troops and the soldiers, he apparently was maybe a medical doctor and assisted rescuing some of these men as they were on Omaha Beach or in the fury of all the gunfire and all the ships coming in and everything. You said, but Lord, the sacrifice that you made on our behalf. And I thought, wow, as powerful as this rendering you're about to hear is, think of how much more the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, Almighty God Himself, coming as man, sacrificing Himself, dying for our sins.
Yes.
And so, as you hear this account, this was played on Memorial Day. I featured it once or twice on WGNN. And then on WGNJ, I had more flexibility. I think I had it around 6 in the morning, around noon, 4, and maybe 8 in the evening. It's about 6.5 minutes. And I turned it into a little radio announcement that basically said, here's Sam Elliott, an actor, telling Sergeant Ray Lambert's story. And so you're going to hear the story. I think PBS aired this. And as Sam Elliott walked out on the stage, so he had this whole script, this whole story memorized, you saw these humongous screens that showed battleships and the soldiers and the firing. It was live footage from World War II, what happened on Omaha Beach. So you had all the visuals that, obviously, with radio, you're not going to be able to see. But I think with his powerful voice and the rendering, the storytelling, it's really powerful. And then it ends. I come back on and tell everyone, don't forget, you know, remember our veterans and those that have served on our behalf and the freedoms that we enjoy. But then at the very end, the Sergeant Ray Lambert was in the audience, and Sam Elliott goes and shakes his hand and says, God bless you, God bless you, such an honor to tell your story. So you won't see that through the radio, but you can picture some of the wartime that was going on. And then at the very end of this, he walks over and shakes Sergeant Ray Lambert's hand, says, God bless you. So here's the introduction that I gave as it aired on Memorial Day. Here is Sam Elliott, an Academy Award-nominated actor, to tell Sergeant Ray Lambert's story.
We were headed to Omaha Beach, and I was glad. After all the fighting in Africa and Sicily, I just wanted to get this war over with. It was daylight on the 6th. I went up on deck and found my brother Bill there. We talked about our chances and what our parents would think. About 6 a.m., the signal came to go to stations. My brother and I promised whoever survived would take care of the other's family. And we shook hands and went our separate ways. I climbed down the nets and got into the Higgins boat with my unit. On the way in, we could hear the battleships firing and see the big shells landing ahead of us. Guys were getting sick and vomiting from the choppy water and the diesel fumes. As we got in closer, the Germans had a bird's eye view of us coming in. We picked up machine gun fire. The bullets clanged against the metal ramp of the boat like hail. Then the big 88s on the hill opened up. Every time a shell whistled overhead, all you could hear was the sound of a banshee screaming. Boats around us were burning. I saw men on fire. Even their shoes were on fire. Dead and wounded were floating in the water. We had orders not to stop and pick anyone up. I told my men, when the ramp drops, hit the water hard and keep as low as you can to dodge the bullets. We sank up over our heads. That was the last time I saw most of them. 31 men jumped off that boat. Just 7 of them made it to the beach. The only cover was a block of concrete the Germans had failed to clear. That's where I set up a collection point for the casualties. Medics were trained not to dig in. We were there to see the troops and for them to see us. I detailed Corporal Raymond Lepore to hunker down and treat the men while I brought in the injured. Ray and I had been together since 39. I knew I could count on him. It was total confusion. Shells exploding, boats blowing up, people yelling because they couldn't hear anything. Machine gun bullets hitting the water all around you. The roar of the boats coming in. It's like you're all alone in a world of a million people because you're concentrating on what you have to do. Hadn't gone far when I felt a bullet go through my right arm. I just kept going. I was thinking of only one thing, getting to the men who needed me. There was a soldier laying right on the edge of the water. One arm was almost shot off. Every time a wave would come in, that arm would be pulled back out to sea, and he'd try to reach out for it. The first thing you're supposed to do is keep a wounded man from going into shock. But he was too far gone. Nothing I could do for him. He died in my arms. I was on my way to treat another soldier when a piece of shrapnel the size of my hand tore a hole in my left thigh. I put a tourniquet on it, gave myself a shot of morphine, and went back to work. You did the job you were trained to do. If you didn't, you died. I could feel my right arm going numb from the first bullet. Saw a guy struggling in chest-deep water. Grabbed him with my good arm just as a Higgins boat rolled in and dropped its ramp. The ramp hit me right in the back, crushed 2 vertebrae, and pushed us both to the bottom. That's when I started talking to the one guy I knew could help me. I said, God, I've asked you many times, but just give me another chance. Let me save one more person. And for some reason, that boat raised its ramp and backed out. Somehow I managed to drag his boat to safety. I told Corporal Lepore he'd have to take my place. He stood up, and then he just collapsed against my shoulder. His helmet fell off, and I saw the hole right in the center. Everything went black after that. The next thing I knew, I was on a boat going back to England. A Navy doctor looked at my dog tags and he told me, we have another Lambert here. My brother's Bill's stretcher was put right next to mine on the dock at Weymouth. He'd been on the beach with G Company. We went to the hospital in the same ambulance. When I woke up, he was on the cot next to me. He looked over and said, what are you doing here? Same thing you are, I told him. And he said, oh God, now what's mother going to think? We both made it out okay. Bill lived to be 92. People who have never been in a war should understand what soldiers give up. The guys we left on Omaha Beach never had a chance to live the lives they've dreamed of. Day hasn't gone by when I haven't prayed for the men we lost, and their families. I still wake up at night sometimes thinking about the guys. Every man that walked into those machine guns and that artillery fire on Omaha Beach that day, every man was a hero. What kind of person would I be if I didn't tell their stories?
May we continue to tell the story and always remember those whom have served this country sacrificially and faithfully. A friendly reminder from your friends here at the Great News Media Group.
Such an honor. Such an honor, sir. Tell your story. God bless you.
Wow, D.H., is that not powerful? I know it's the second time we've heard it in the last 20 or so minutes, but...
Yeah, and you expect us to speak now.
Yeah. You know, this is probably the fifth or sixth time I've heard it, but I don't know, maybe having... I've listened to it privately, but maybe having you here, I don't know why, I welled up even more and more choked up. Maybe it being the fifth or sixth time, I'm hearing more things in it.
Yes.
But what a striking example of an individual that sacrificed himself after being shot and then shot again and trying to grab another guy. And then yet he pleaded to God, you know, save me. And
powerful.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as I was driving in today thinking maybe I could have Dee a part of this, you're a wartime baby.
Yes.
I was at it, okay, the, like 45, you know, 41 to 45, and then I was like 55, 65. And I was like, yeah, Dee's probably about this age.
1942.
So. Oh, well, I thought this tribute, though it was aired on Memorial Day, is a tribute that we can all take heart in, and I love the fact that as you prayed, you said, but Mark, also think about the sacrifice that Jesus made on our behalf.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, well, a great way to start off a Wednesday. And Wednesday, generally, we read a story out of our Prime Lifetimes paper, the May edition. In fact, the June edition will arrive this Friday, so this will be the last time we talk much about the paper. But you wrote a story. It's on the front page of Section B, B1. It's entitled, To Bully or Not to Bully? That is the question. To Bully and Not to Bully by Dee Chesser, our special guest on this, the Wednesday edition of Mark and Friends.
I love the picture that Kelly put on there, too, because I had curly hair and I was short and little. But I had to learn about how not to be a bully. My parents had multiple opportunities to teach me about bullying. Each one a chance for me to learn. Unfortunately, it wasn't always about the other person. Despite their best parenting, it seemed hard for me to differentiate between the bullies out there and becoming one of them. This was the lesson to be learned. Down the block and around the corner from our house, there was a bigger house, unkempt and untidy, home to our neighborhood bullies. As a five-year-old, I had witnessed them in action, scaring all of us who were younger, including taking and breaking our favorite toys right in front of us, and picking on the youngest and the smallest. When I started school, I became one of their favorite targets. Their parochial school was halfway between my school and home. Every day, as I passed that midpoint, they came running at me. And for the last 3.5 blocks, I had to run as fast as I could, which was pretty fast because I came from a long line of runners. I could outrun them, even though I was only half their size. This went on until one wonderful day. As I was running for dear life, a car pulled up behind me. It was my dad. The plant had shut down early, and there he was, my rescuer. He jumped out of the car and had a long, quiet talk with the boys behind me. It must have made a good impression. They never chased me again.
You know, as you're reading this, I'm picturing the Christmas story.
Oh.
And, you know, the bullies, and then finally the one guy just... But your dad stepped in, so that's good.
He did. An opportunity for a lesson to be learned with firm but gentle teaching. Then, several years later, as I walked down the aisle as matron of honor at my sister-in-law's wedding, I glanced to my right at the groom's family section. There sat the brothers, every single bully. my sister-in-law and best friend was marrying the first cousin of the bullies.
The bullies.
My future brother-in-law. I was always a champion for the underdog, and second grade was a challenge, because there I met our class bully, a sullen, seemingly mean older boy who had been held back a grade and probably needed friendship and understanding. Mm. But we were too scared to offer it. Consequently, he bullied us, and we took it. Until one day. On that day, at recess, I saw my opportunity to act. This hapless boy was seated on one of the low border fences built of metal piping on the school playground. I picked up a big rock, well, big for me, came up from behind and beamed him.
Oh, geez.
Needless to say, we were both summoned to the principal's office, called the Tower. It was the only thing on the third floor of the school in a scary place. I was defiant. The class bully was still crying. The principal had heard the whole story. He turned first to my victim and said, "Are you going to pick on the little children in your class anymore?" Between sobs, the answer came, "No, sir." And he didn't. Then the principal turned to me.
Oh.
"Deanne, are you ever going to hit him again?" And I answered boldly, "I sure am if he ever hits the little kids again." One of us had our parents called to pick us up, and it wasn't the class bully. Another opportunity for gentle but firm teaching. I grew up, married, and became a parent. My son seemed to handle encounters with his classmates well, but my daughter had a little bit of feisty in her, perhaps inherited. She was an adorable little girl, slightly on the skinny side, who had a passion for underdogs. Sound familiar? And for those who had less than she had, materially and in terms of inner strength. To her credit, she would give things away to those with less and stand up for those who were picked on, though not always appropriately. So, it was no small wonder that one day at recess, after observing the latest incident, she marched up to that particular bully from her class and kicked him soundly in the shins. Then, standing back with hands on hips, she announced, "You can't touch me. I have a brother in the sixth grade." And he didn't.
Oh, jeez.
And yet another teaching and learning opportunity. There are so many.
What brings to mind when they say the acorn doesn't fall far from the tree.
Or
the iron cone, the pot black.
Yes. There are so many chances for us to learn, not only about how to treat those caught up in acts of bullying, but also about how to not become one of them. My parents took those opportunities to teach me, and I took the opportunities to teach the next generation. These lessons involved interventions for the obvious bullies and correction for those of us who thought our righteous indignation justified crossing the line. It didn't. Lesson learned. Because it's about the other person and us.
D.A. Chesser. D is director of the Great News Radio Children's Choir, and you can contact her at heretospoil65@yahoo.com, heretospoil65@yahoo.com. And this is kind of interesting. I guess I've never thought of a girl being a bully. I've always just thought the boys are always the bullies, so this has shed some new light on things, but generally, I always think boys are the bullies, maybe bigger, stronger, more obnoxious or whatever. They're always the ones pulling the girls' pigtails or doing all those kind of things.
Well, and in our family, actually, I think of my mother and grandmother, too, so many of the women who were kind of crusaders. And I think that's where I fell into it. And my daughter, too, you know, because we were standing up for people who were being bullied. We thought we were okay.
Yeah. Well, that's the uniqueness of this article is that righteous indignation, how we always say, well, we wouldn't do it like that. We're more righteous, we're this way, and mm-hmm. we don't give others the same slack sometimes, but...
But when you find the right size rock, there you are.
Yeah, there you are. And I would say you're strong-willed, you know. Mm-hmm. It can be a very good thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to overly make light of the article because I think it's so well-written and it's fun and humorous, but there are parents that are dealing with their children being bullied now and agonizing, like, what do you do and how do we talk to these kids and how do we involve ourselves and get the parents involved? And I would say for those kids in school now, but that's not the case.
Right.
But bullying is something that really needs to be dealt with, brought to into the light. And you can certainly pray over it, but sometimes we have to take measures and steps and take a stand. So bullying is not a good thing. And
right.
We don't encourage that.
Mm-mm.
All right, everyone. Well, we're halfway through the week. I don't know. We're getting near the end of this month when maybe some normalcy or things return to
hopefully
the new normal. I know there's certain states that are allowing certain things, and it's hard to keep up with. Mm. Can you go to church yet or not? And I'm like, well, I'm not sure where the governor and everyone stands, and depending on the state you're in, or the state, the real Illinois or Indiana or wherever, there are different rules and regulations, but be safe and keep the social distancing, follow the rules as they're disclosed today, and just keep praying up that things will return to normal and we'll get through it all because we have a great God.
Yes.
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Dee Chesler with Great News Radio and the Prime Life Times, a ministry of the Great News Media Group. God bless you and have a great day and night.